Where does that tunnel lead? Lady Bianca said, indicating the other passage.
To the cathedral,
the Pedrizo explained. The Calvert was once named the Sepulchre. It was Ignazio's mausoleum until our seat moved from the cathedral. Lady Bianca shook her head. I had always wondered why the cardinal had such a large palace, when your own, forgive me, Pedrizo, is so much smaller. Blame it on the vagaries of history. Are we ready? Charlia asked. They all nodded. Then let us enter. He spoke in a hushed voice because this was sacred ground. We are now entering the catacombs where the rich stars are buried. And at the end is Ignazio's mausoleum. They walked through a tunnel lined with niches cut out of the rock. The air was thick with the dry scent of ages, and Lady Bianca had the brief impression of mouldering remains, desiccated bodies, limbs and torsos held together by a thin layer of peeling brown skin. When they reached the end, they stood in awed silence. The double door ahead was plain and ancient and opened at a push. Charlia led them through to another corridor. The scent of long dead bodies grew intense like a rarefied spice, and to either side they could feel the cool empty spaces as they passed the earliest catacombs where the very first members of the Rich Star family were laid to rest. The flickering candles only served to throw the darkness of the niches into impenetrable blackness, but over each there were names carved into the stone. Lady Bianca let her fingers brush the engraved letters. Cristoforo the Black, Juntal the Pious, Bertinal the Elder, Diadi the Conqueror. I can hardly believe, she said to Charlia, that we shall get to see Ignazio himself. It fills me with joy, Charlia said. The last 50 yards were dark. The tunnel had been damaged in some ancient fire and never properly restored. The crypts here were empty, the names lost, and the ornate plaster that decorated their surfaces had long since moulded away. Bare stone showed the herringbone chisel marks of the servitor masons who had carved the tunnels out of the bedrock. There were a few niches where candles had once stood, and the tunnel bowed gently towards the middle, where millennia of footsteps had worn the floor away. Finally, a doorway of heavy grey plasteel stood before them, with traces of gold leaf still visible in the fire-discoloured filigree surface. Charlia stepped forward and pressed his own palm flat against the key panel. His open hand fitted the impression in the stone. There was no blood this time, no whirl of cogs and gears, just the single, high chime of a hidden bell, and then the panel doors slid open. Lady Bianca pushed ahead of the others and was right behind the Pedrizo. The smell of decay was absent inside, in its place the air of ages and a faint hint of sandalwood and amber incense. Come with grace. Charlia spoke the words with a formality and dignity that spoke of some ancient ritual or mass. And remember the many who have trodden this path and not strayed, despite the years of darkness that press on either side, despite the faithless and the impure, despite the imposition of a false faith upon us all. Lady Bianca answered with the others in the required fashion. We shall not forget, we shall not stray, we await the return of the light. Charlia closed his eyes, his lips moving in a silent prayer, then he nodded and beckoned them all inside. Lady Bianca was immediately struck by the sense of space. The room was vast and airy, and, almost diminutive in the centre, held in a bubble of shimmering golden stasis, was the body of their ancestor, Lord Marshal Ignazio Solar. She stepped forward and looked up, and about herself, at the vast dome that stretched above her head. She saw gold and silver, and the faint gleam of precious stones. In the centre of the chapel stood a round oculus, and from it fell a soft yellow light that illuminated the smooth marble of the floor, which was set with a symbol of forked lightning and the leopard badge of Ignazio Richstar. The private chapel of the Richstars was a wonder of early artwork. A painting of the imperial palace showed a gleaming gold-roofed fortress of white and red stone, and in the middle there were texts that would have the whole assembly tried on Ophelia for heresy. Set at regular points around the circular walls were servitor niches whose occupants had long since died and whose function had been forgotten. But none of this was of any interest to the visitors. The family gathered and looked down in stunned silence. Here was the body, not just of their forebear, but also of a saint, founder, hero, and figure of legend. A man who bestrode a powerful moment when the Imperium of Man colonised the deserted tracts of the galaxy. A man who had been alive in the age of the God Emperor. The stasis field flickered with curling blue corpuscent. Ignazio Richstar looked as though he might be asleep, except for the stillness of his repose. There was no beat of blood in his veins, no lift of his chest as he inhaled, no mist of exhalation about his mouth. He was still, frozen, held in a moment of time that stretched back 10,000 years to the great days of exploration and settlement. Ignazio Richstar had the long, lean, chiselled cheek face of a man much weathered by life and by circumstance. This was a face that had seen worlds put to fire and blade. The Gallows Cluster had been rich in native flora and fauna when humans arrived. Some had been beautiful, some sentient, many deadly. All had been destroyed. This was a man that had looked into the maws of Xenos races and consigned their evolutionary journey to extinction, their gene pool to oblivion. All this could be seen in the rugged jawline, the crowfoot creases in the corner of his eyes, the stern set of his brow. Lady Bianca had hoped to see some family resemblance, but there was almost none, except for an authoritarian air that reminded her of her father. Ignazio's ornate armour was decorated with a pattern of golden roses and thorns. An enclosed helmet was tucked under one arm, and his legs were sheathed in greaves and thigh plates. His hands were gloved and joined in quiet repose, while a high collar of ceramite lay open. Sparks and threads of light gently crazed the bubble of the stasis field as its blue glow uplit the faces of those who bent towards their forebear. To think that face gazed upon the sublime visage of the holy emperor himself. It was Shalia who spoke. There were tears in the chaplain's eyes. They fell unhindered as the magnitude of the moment sank in. That face had beheld the emperor as a divine being, living, moving, speaking. "Those eyes," Shalia said, "looked into the eyes of the emperor himself, if any could hold the gaze of such a divine being, and no doubt the emperor had spoken to him." A tear fell from Shalia's cheek. It hit the stasis field with a brief fizz of golden energy. "Careful," the Pedrizo warned. Shalia nodded and drew in a deep breath. "Yes, we are here for a reason. Come, gather round. We are here to witness." They gathered in a circle. Shalia stood between the Pedrizo and Lady Bianca and opened the silken pouch that hung about his neck. From it, he took a pack of antique embossed cards. "The Starborns have always come here, to the shrine of Saint Ignazio, to understand the many threads of the future. Here, in this sacred space, I shall read the will of the Emperor." He took the sacred wafers and broke the pack in three places, and then laid the cards out before him on the pedestal. Starting at the left, he turned each card. The first was the Emperor's throne. The next was the eye of Horus, inverted. Sharlia trembled as his hands moved. The third was the lost child. Sharlia made the sign of the Aquila as he put all three piles together, signifying the Emperor reborn, and he took the last card. It showed the God Emperor. Sharlia closed his eyes and pressed his hands together in prayer. The others looked from him to the cards and back again. Each of them felt a chill run down their back. At last, Sharlia lifted his cards and wrapped the pack back in their sacred cloth. Brothers and sisters, for our church to succeed, the Imperium as it is must fall. He looked about from face to face. The cards confirm it. This is the hour that we have all prayed for, the moment that our family has devoted itself to. The meaning is plain. The heretics who despoil Holy Terra will be overthrown by the despoiler. This is our chance to save the Imperium of Man. This is the moment that the Saviour Emperor shall be reborn and the Imperium of Man restored to its ancient glory. Lady Bianca looked from one member of the group to another. You can see that in the cards.
I can.
Then what exactly are you suggesting?
That we kill the heretics upon our planet and raise the flag of redemption before it is too late.
And who are these heretics?
The Cardinal, the forces of the Imperium, any who stand against us.
You are joking, surely?
No, I am not, Sharlia said. Did you ever think that the restoration of the true church would be bloodless?
No, but I have dabbled in the tarot, and I did not see what you saw.
The Pedrizzo stepped forward.
Lady Bianca, we must have faith in Sharlia. He is the head of the temple.
Lady Bianca looked at them all.
You are frightening me. You are risking everything on this desperate gamble. I have heard mystics talk of the end of days since I was born. Forgive an old lady from mentioning her age, but I am now 363 years old, and I've seen many of your type in my time. Every defeat is a portent, a punishment for our sins and our lack of faith. You will risk everything on those few cards.
She looked for support, but it was the Pedrizzo who spoke.
I believe, ever since the Cadian Gate fell, we have known that the end of days is upon us. Either we rise up, or we fall with the corrupt impostors. The Imperium is weak. It is a paper tiger baring its fangs. A little prod, and it will fall over.
And then what?
We march on Terra and liberate it from the heretics who pollute its paths.
I came here for guidance as to how I could take my planet back, Lady Bianca said. Who will fight the heretics, if not the Imperium?
Sharlia smiled tolerantly.
I have an army of the faithful who will throw the scourged back to the hell they crawled from.
Where is this army?
I believe that they have just disembarked onto the planet, the orphans of 100 worlds, just waiting for the word.
She laughed now. Oh, I see. You have an army of flotsam and cowards, underhive scum. Is that the metal from which you forge your army?
They are holy warriors for a holy cause. The steel within them is faith. Their weapons are belief. Their armour is certitude.
Lady Bianca shook her head. I cannot believe we have to stand here and listen to this.
Lady Bianca, Sharlia sighed, you saw the tarot. This is the moment that has been foretold to us. When 10,000 years are over, the despoiler shall be set free. He will take peace from the galaxy. He makes brother kill brother. To him is given a mighty sword.
Words,
Bianca spat dismissively. The ramblings of a man long dead.
Prophecy, Charlia stated. The guide to our salvation. Don't you see? Mankind must act. It must throw off this despotic and corrupt church and return to the old true ways of Saint Vandir, the blessed and the pure.
Lady Bianca took a step forward.
Pedrizzo, this is madness. We cannot allow this.
The Pedrizzo looked out of his depth as he clutched his silk-tasseled cap in his paint-stained hands. He looked from Bianca to Charlia before saying,
"What can I do?"
"Oppose it,"
Lady Bianca declared. She looked for support, but none of them stepped forward. She cursed.
"He sees what he wants in the cards. If none of you are man enough, then it is up to me to stop this."
A hidden blade appeared suddenly in her hand. She moved with surprising speed for a lady of her age, the blade slamming into Charlia's gut. Charlia looked down at the place where the blade had struck. The blade had cut through the brown cloth of his smock.
"Lady Bianca, I am disappointed with you. You have chosen failure over victory, stasis over regrowth."
"I have chosen sanity," she said, and drove the knife deep into his flesh.
There were gasps, but Charlia did not move.
"My armour is faith. Do not fear, brothers and sisters. I am not hurt. The Emperor protects those who have faith."
He stepped back as the others removed the weapon from Lady Bianca's hand and opened his smock to show his unmarked flesh.
"How did you do that?" Bianca demanded. "What infernal device are you wearing?"
Charlia shook his head sadly.
"The Emperor protects, and he also punishes those who are weak. I'm afraid that you shall have to stay here, my lady, in guarded isolation. We cannot allow you to interfere with the coming liberation."
Chapter 5. Benedict took the salamander from the starport. He arrived at the Calvert 3 hours after Lady Bianca and the other rich stars. It was noon, and despite the heat, an honour guard of local Calabania in full dress uniform of red and blue breeches had assembled. Benedict took them in with a glance. They looked too smart to make good soldiers. Their captain shouted an order as he dismounted. Benedict briefly caught the man's eye as he returned the salute. They had clearly heard the news of the fall of Kypra. They looked nervous. Benedict made the sign of the Aquila with his remaining hand as he dismounted to the broad marble steps. A tall, thin man was waiting for him at the top of the stairs.
"General Benedict, welcome to Potence. I am Chantal, equerry to Pedrizzo Udelig Richstar. We are glad to see the face of one who has such a record of service to the Holy Throne. Our forces are brave, but they need leadership."
Benedict looked impatient as the man finished his speech.
"Where is the Pedrizzo?"
His equerry put in quickly,
"Sir, I am sorry, but the Pedrizzo is in conference. We are expecting the declaration of the great feast day."
"Which feast?"
"The Feast of St. Ignazio," Chantal explained. "It is the most important religious observance on the planet. Well, in the whole system."
Benedict didn't understand the importance or the fuss.
"I think I read something about it. Well, as long as it does not interfere with the military preparations."
Chantal's face was pained.
"Nothing happens during the festival. The whole planet shuts down."
Benedict was listening now.
"When exactly is this festival happening?"
Chantal hesitated.
"The exact moment, I cannot say yet. It depends on the brightness of the local star. The augurs are expected to declare it any moment."
"I am sure you are aware of the proximity of the forces of heresy," Benedict said.
Chantal nodded. His lips remained tight. Benedict wondered how much the equerry did in fact know.
So listen to me. I need the full compliance of the Pedrizo and his forces.
Chantal was clearly concerned about something.
Lord General, the Pedrizo has many rituals to fulfil. He is the saint's direct descendant.
I don't care who he is. I care about the defence of this system.
As if to underline his point, the sound of autogun fire rose in the air far off. Moments later, a distant siren sounded.
Of course, the equerry said quickly. I do not know how familiar you are with our local history, General Benedict. The rich stars have upheld their sacred duty to the Emperor himself throughout all these millennia. They hold the Emperor more sacred than any other in the Imperium. I can assure you that the people hold the rich stars just as dearly to their hearts.
Listen, I will come back when the Pedrizo is available.
Chantal took Benedict's good hand.
No, please, I insist. The Pedrizo is keen to meet you. As soon as he is ready, he will see you. Come, I will do my best to be entertaining.
Chantal stepped back as Benedict and Mia exchanged glances.
Benedict sighed. This was the last thing he wanted, but Mia pulled a face.
Let's keep the local sweet, he said. Meet him, greet him, and then we can move on.
Benedict turned to the equerry.
How long will the Pedrizo be?
No more than an hour.
Right, Benedict said. You have an hour.
Chantal led the two Cadians from one ornate room to another and showed them a succession of murals that depicted key moments in the history of the Gallows Cluster. First was the granting of the Imperial Warrant, which showed a rather romantic golden throne and a strangely lifelike emperor, bearded and wizened with cares and age, but distinctly alive, handing a prominent figure, who, Benedict guessed, had to be Ignazio Richstar, his Imperial Warrant. Next were a series of trials that Ignazio faced in bringing this area to pacification. To his surprise, Benedict found his interest being piqued.
What are these? Benedict asked of a mural that showed what appeared to be giant worms.
Zweig, Chantal said. They were the dominant species of the Gallows Cluster.
Never heard of them.
They no longer exist. No living specimens, anyway. They were wiped out by Ignazio in his Third Crusade. They were a form of predatory worm. I learnt only a little about them when I was younger. The hatchlings were no longer than a man. They had a thick layer of fat, apparently. There's a tale from my home world that speaks of how the first settlers were forced to eat them to survive. I can't imagine they were very delicious.
You are not from this planet, then?
No, you cannot tell from my accent.
No, Benedict said.
Ah, it is very distinctive to us. I come from Gilgamesh 9. It is where the best equerries are trained.
Benedict was unconcerned with the finer details of equerries. He looked back at the mural.
If you are interested, General, on Potens we have one of the few remaining examples of the species in existence. It has been held in stasis for the last 5,000 years. It is in the Pedrizo's private collection. In the Contemplatorium. I can petition him on your behalf if you would like to see it.
Thank you, Benedict said. Maybe later.
He checked his chronometer.
I must insist that I see the Pedrizo.
He will be ready soon. Meanwhile, let me show you the building of the Holy Cathedral.
Benedict's patience was wearing dangerously thin.
Listen, I'm here to organise the defence of this planet, not to admire its art.
Chantal seemed almost hurt by this outburst.
But if you don't know the history and culture of this system, I fear that you will not be as successful as you might be.
Sir, with all due respect, I am not a cultured man, nor do I want to be. I am a soldier. I know about war, which is complicated enough as it is.
It involves understanding the potential of soldiers, emplacements, fields of fire, trajectories, supplies and terrain, and most importantly, knowing when you are going to be lucky. This is what I am an expert in. This is what I am here to do. I am charged with rallying the defence of this system, which has, until this moment, been woefully inadequate. I want to meet the Pedrizzo, and then I want to meet my fellow Cadians, because the future of this system depends on them. Do I make myself understood? The equerry trembled.
I understand you clearly.
Benedict felt immediately better. He could afford to be conciliatory. Now, if you will forgive my bluntness, if the Pedrizzo cannot see me now, I want three things. Firstly, I want to be taken to the Cadian 101st. Secondly, I want all the local commanders to be brought to me within the hour. And thirdly, tell the Pedrizzo to come and see me at his earliest convenience. Half an hour later, a salamander was waved through the gates of the intake barracks. General Benedict leapt down from the running plate and marched straight towards the wing where the banner of the 101st hung. The flag was limp in the midday heat, and the glare of the sun made him squint as he strode towards the open gateway. Colonel Beethoven was the current commander of the 101st. He and Benedict had fought together for years. The colonel strode forward to greet the general. Beethoven pointed towards Benedict's folded sleeve.
What happened to the arm?
I'll tell you sometime, but now we have work to do, Benedict said, walking towards the entrance. He paused briefly to acknowledge men he remembered. He knew their names and the battles they had fought in. Dahl, Sparker, even Rivald was there. Each old comrade slowed him down, and when he reached the steps up to his office, he stopped and paused. Emotion tightened his throat. He nodded.
It's damned fine to see you all again.
10 minutes later, Beethoven and Benedict were standing in the command bunker, going through the latest astropathic transmissions. The compound post was set in the rock of the Acropolis. It had the cool, damp atmosphere of all underground rooms. The similarity to Observation Post 9983 made Benedict feel a little uneasy. On the table before him lay a chart of the gallows cluster. On one side lay the inner spiral darkness, on the other the homeworlds of the Segmentum Solar. Red markers showed which planets had fallen to the Scourged. He leant forward, almost forgetting that his right hand was missing, and steadying himself on his left.
It doesn't make sense, he said.
Beethoven paused and looked across. He hadn't thought about whether it made sense or not. He had just been trying to work out how to defend the place.
Why not?
Well, look, the system should be easily defended. It has its own troops, long ties between the ruling family and their home worlds. How have the heretics managed to drive so deep into the system and so quickly? Beethoven shook his head.
Superior forces?
What do we know of the Scourged?
Beethoven pulled a data slate out and scrolled through it.
This is highly classified, but their core is thought to come from an Imperial Guard regiment named the Sesed 13th, heavy infantry regiment stationed on Belisar. They slaughtered their commanding officers and rebelled 2 months before the planet fell. They were thought to have been wiped out before the fall of Cadia.
How many were in the Sesed 13th?
10,000?
You cannot tell me that this whole system has fallen to just 10,000 renegade guardsmen.
No, but they seem particularly adept at winning over local forces. On Marquis, most of the fighting was against cultists.
So there's an elite corps with a horde of cultists?
Yes, sir.
Any of ours?
He meant Cadians. It was a question spoken so quietly that only Beethoven could hear it. The other man gave an almost imperceptible nod, and Benedict felt sick at the thought. There was a long pause. It was Benedict who broke the silence.
So who is Dracul Zar? He's rumoured to have once been an Imperial colonel from the Sesed troops. Dracul is an honorific among them. With the Tsar suffix, it translates as something like little father. No picked images exist of his actual features.
Benedict had nothing to say to that. The name implied affection, a charismatic commander who could bring many disparate forces together with great speed. Benedict slammed his hand onto the table.
What I want to know is how the throne are they taking world after world?
Beethoven hazarded a number of guesses.
Speed, terror, corruption.
On Marquis, you say you were fighting cultists.
Yes, sir. Reports imply an elite assault on the governor's palace, decapitation strike. Once it had fallen, the defences appear to have quickly crumbled.
Benedict took it all in.
So our enemies have an experienced corps and an able and charismatic commander.
They must also have a fleet. Look at the speed of their assault. Any navy ships missing?
Beethoven shook his head. If we can learn anything from this, I'd expect an elite assault on the Ever City aimed at killing the Pedrizo. Make sure he's well protected. Is there anywhere else we can garrison?
Beethoven shook his head.
The Sisters of the Ebon Chalice have a daughter house on the Cathedral Peak. They have made it clear that they will not accept guard regiments on the summit.
Benedict rolled his eyes. And the Ever City is a warren.
Yes, sir. I think that might act in our favour. I have identified key thoroughfares to the Acropolis if the city should be attacked. None of them will allow a direct assault. With local support, we can bog any attackers down for, well, months.
Good, Benedict said.
And if the enemy enter the city, we should have at least a few days' warning.
He drew out the chart that showed Potence. The Acropolis was marked with an aquila, and about it wound the streets of the Ever City, and then the industrial and agricultural districts, and the pale blocks of the starport.
The tent city stretches from here to here.
Benedict nodded.
Who is guarding the starport? Calabania, the 66th Barrelin Mechanised. They are in charge of all critical infrastructure.
Are they solid?
They're under strength. But from their service reports, they appear reliable.
Benedict nodded.
Look here.
He pointed at the star maps.
There are three guard divisions on their way to the planet of Arjun's shrine, and all the enemy have to do is take Domus and the salient is lost. Who was in charge of Imperial defences? The Pedrizo, ultimately.
Benedict swore.
We must assume that we have less time than we think. Have all troops put on standby.
He paced back and forth, moved counters, assessed various military strengths and opportunities. At last, he had it in place.
Right, get these orders recorded. What is the name of the astropathic facility?
Mia had no idea. He turned to Beethoven.
Nullum Apec. It's 100 miles away, in the Supramonti, the mountains. Will this festival interfere with it? It shouldn't. Why the hell is it all the way out there? The Ever City is the worst place for astropathic communication, apparently. I was told that the density of shrines and holy places gives off too much psychic pollution. All the pilgrims going into religious ecstasy. The psychic relay is far enough away not to be interfered with.
Benedict issued a series of orders to be conveyed to the various commanders in the local systems. He sounded increasingly bullish as he went on, pointing to the neighbouring system.
We're going to hold the enemy, and then we're going to counterattack at Blackrock. The flanks of the Scourged will be wide open.
Mia stood over the scribe, making sure the orders were recorded properly. The dockets were double-checked. At last he said,
"Do you think it will work?" We shall see. At the moment, I just want to convey a sense of purpose to my commanders. All I see is confusion and ill-judged offensives. What is important now is to steady nerves and to let my commanders know that someone is giving orders. Once we've stopped their advance, we can work out how to throw them back.
At last, Benedict seemed to have exhausted himself.
Have those sent urgently.
The orders were taken under guard. Bendix noticed belatedly the cup of recaf that had been sitting by the map. It was cold, but he took a sip nonetheless and looked surprised.
Well, at least the recaf is good.
I have a number of communications, Mia said. The Pedrizzo sends his apologies for his absence. Canoness Maddalena compliments you on your appointment. Standard formal greetings. Cardinal Archbishop Zerium welcomes your appointment and the arrival of the 101st. He would like to conduct a mass on our behalf after the festival. Blessing of the weapons and all that.
Good. Stall him. Last thing I need is a bloody bishop wasting my time. If he insists on coming any earlier, see if he can anoint the tanks. That'll amuse the troops.
Yes, sir.
Bendix took them in.
Right, let's get moving before this festival starts.
The command staff were exhausted. They had been locked up for hours in the cramped bunker. Bendix led them back up the steps. When he got to the top, the fresh air struck him. He walked out and looked about. The sun was setting.
Why are all the bells ringing?
Mia had just been handed a note.
Sir, it appears the festival of St. Ignazio has been declared. We have 2 days to get everything in order.
Chapter 6. The peculiarities of the feast of St. Ignazio had all been explained to Cardinal Archbishop Zerium when he had arrived a few years earlier from the shrine world of Greater Trine and was invested as pontiff to the Gallows Cluster. It was his ordinand, Tobias Vettor, who had introduced him to the local customs. Vettor was a thin cleric with hooked nose and bright blue eyes, sitting in an alcove outside the cardinal's bedchamber. The feast comes around every 11 years, Vettor had explained, when the solar cycle of the local star, named the Leopard Star, throws up a series of dark spots that move towards the centre and lead to a significant dimming of its light.
So there is no set date?
No, Vettor told him. It is the movement of these spots towards the sun's equatorial regions that signifies the conjunction. A solar event that commemorated the great victory of Ignazio over the Xenos races of Potens. It is not until the sunspots begin to conjoin that the feast day can be predicted with any certainty. While 11 years is the usual recurrence, feast days have been known to come as quickly as every 7 years or as far apart as 16. Cardinal Zerium's palace was set within the ordered gardens of the cathedral, at the summit of the Acropolis of the Ever-City. He had few luxuries in his life, but one of them was the collection of ornithopters that he kept on the roof of his palace. The basilica was far bigger than any cardinal of Zerium's modest desires could need. It tumbled down the upper slopes of the Acropolis, giving the appearance of a building slowly slipping from the summit. The lower courses were overgrown with vegetation, the rooms they contained having seen better days. Their iron-barred windows and gateways were boarded up and abandoned to mice and lizards. The generatoria that had once powered their ice chambers had run cold, their intake vents now sealed up with bricks and mortar. And within the vast basements were stone-lined cisterns, storerooms of giant amphora, chapels, mess rooms and void generators that had been long since sealed and left to moulder. The cardinal and his personal household lived in the upper central chambers, which had been kept clean and neat, although the many murals were starting to show their age and suffer from the carelessness of staff who brushed past or ran the food trolleys a little too fast from the kitchens. The cardinal had many plans for the basilica. All this unused space should not go to waste. He would establish an orphanage for the children of Potens, a langer for pilgrims, meeting rooms, prayer halls. All these plans moved about his head, and he would start on them just as soon as the authorities could establish peace within the Gallows Cluster. Cardinal Zerium wanted to improve the world, and he recalled a conversation from only this morning with Vettel, who had told him of a family who had been found dead at the gates of the city. "They starved to death," Vettel had said. "Why did they not let them in?" "It is the orders of the Predrizzo," Vettel said, "with the feast day due to be announced any day soon." "Ah, yes, the feast of Saint Ignazio. So we sit and wait for the augurs to make up their minds, and meanwhile the people suffer. The Predrizzo does send them food. But what use is that if it does not reach the hungry?" The augurs had been watching the leopard star for nearly 2 months, each of them eager to be the one who saw the signs that declared that the feast day of Saint Ignazio had come. A feast day was due, of course, but it was not until the distinctive spots began to coalesce that they put the cathedral staff on warning. That morning at dawn, the augurs saw and affirmed the readings, and when all three of them were in agreement, they came as a deputation to the cardinal's bedchamber, their hands clutched in nervous excitement. The cardinal had taken the tidings with stoic calm. He listened, said a prayer of thanks, and let the augurs make an announcement to the Ever-City. He wondered how long it would take for the news to disseminate, and had recaff brought, and his morning posset of egg and milk and sweet wine. When the bells began to ring, he was sitting propped up in his four-poster bed. He listened for a while as they called out over the city. When he was ready, he shouted for his ordinand. "Vettor?" Vettor stepped through the doorway and bowed. "Yes, Your Holiness?"
"Help me down," Zerium said, and threw back the sheets, sticking his pale, hairy feet out of the bed.
Vettor hurried forward, picking up the cardinal's slippers, pressing them onto each foot before they touched the cold floor.
"Here, Your Holiness," he said,
and took the cardinal's hand and helped him down. The music of bells rang over the whole city.
"So the augurs have made the proclamation."
"You do not sound happy, Your Holiness."
"No, I am. I know how much the feast means to the people here. I hope they get the portents they desire."
He paused.
"I suppose it is that I still do not feel as though the people have taken me to their hearts."
"That moment will come," Ordinand Vettor assured him. "The people here are not so used to strangers. Until the great calamity, we were just a small scatter of dots between the two arms of the galaxy. The gallows cluster was on the way to nowhere. We were left to our own customs. We always appointed our own cardinals and ecclesiarchs. You are the first cardinal from outside for nearly 1,000 years. Vettor spoke clear Gothic, without any local accent. The cardinal forced a smile.
"Sometimes I forget you were born here. Would you prefer a cardinal from among your own?"
Vettor laughed.
"You think I want your chop?" "It has crossed my mind."
Vettor laughed once more.
"No, Your Holiness, it's all yours, I promise.
I could not do it as well as you."
"I do my best,"
the cardinal said with a sigh.
"You are a rare thing in this galaxy.
You are a good man," Vettor told him. The cardinal stopped.
"Thank you," he said. "You are not the first person to say that to me."
Vettor held his gaze. "It is true." Cardinal Zerium was nicknamed the Owl by the cloistered community of the cathedral. He was a small and bent man with short cropped hair, a small, hard mouth, and wide, surprised eyes that did indeed give him an owlish appearance. This morning, after prayers, he entered the library at the top of the palace, and the tech parts of the servo scribe whirred gently as it went from sleep to active mode. Vettor's eyes followed the cardinal as he strode to the leaded window and looked down on the cathedral gardens, where the shape of the Aquila was marked out with neatly trimmed yew hedges.
"I found the lists from the last ceremony," Vettor announced with pride,
and unwound the rolls of vellum onto Zerium's parchment table, using a velvet pouch filled with sand to weigh the two ends of the roll down. He started to dictate to the servo scribe in the corner of the room. The quill hand scratched away on individual dockets for each of the preparations that had to be fulfilled. There were ecclesiarchy robes to be brought out of storage, tons of incense to be carried up from the cathedral storerooms, holy books to be retrieved from the stasis chambers, shoes to be bought, and deputations to receive from all the religious and civil bodies who would want to be involved in the processions. It seemed like hours of work just to map out everything that had to be done. At midday, the bells were still ringing. There was a knock at the door. Vettor went to see what it was.
Deputations for the festival?
No, actually, Vettor said. He read the message aloud. An Imperial General had just made warp transit and landed that morning. The Cardinal pressed his hands together in a symbol of thanksgiving.
Thanks be to the Holy Throne.
He made the sign of the Aquila, and when he opened his eyes, Vettor was still holding the parchment.
Is there more?
Yes. Shalia, the bringer of news, arrived this morning. He also sends his greetings. Actually, it appears he is waiting downstairs. He asks for a private meeting. Shalia was the private emissary of the Rich Stars. An odd post, something like the family's private chaplain. And as their chaplain, Shalia had access to the heads of each of the ruling families of the sector. Zerium had learnt in his few years on Potence that Shalia probably wielded more power than he did as the Cardinal Archbishop. It was an important meeting. Zerium adjusted his purple gowns and reached for his stick.
Show him up.
There was theatre in any religious observance, and Cardinal Zerium was not unaware of this. He wore his purple gowns well and always carried a short walking stick, not for any infirmity, but almost as a stage prop that a mountebank might use to complete his costume. It was a short cane, made of maquila wood that had, over a number of seasons on his home world of Dimamar, been carved, straightened, blessed, and then shaped into an object worthy of a cardinal. It had a ferrule of intricately carved silver and a tiny silver-chased servo skull for the handle. The tap-tap of the staff upon the black marble floor of his private chambers focused him as he looked out of the library window down into the cathedral gardens. There was a faint scrape at the door. Vettor cleared his throat. Shalia, the bringer of news. Shalia came through the doorway with a rush. He was barefoot, Zerium noted, and he envied him the simplicity of his life and appearance.
Your Eminence, Shalia said, and bowed.
He took the Cardinal's outstretched hand and kissed the signet ring.
How is the flying?
Zerium blushed a little.
Oh, my little hobby. Well, I have not been able to indulge for a while now. We are all on tenterhooks for the festival.
Shalia smiled indulgently.
Well, perhaps afterwards you can indulge me too. But what a day to meet when the feast of Saint Ignatio has been declared.
Indeed.
There was much to talk about, and Vettor served them both sweetmeats and recaf as they discussed news from across the sector.
There is something else, Shalia said at the end. I took a liberty.
We are both aware of how bare the defences of the gallows cluster are. Because of this, I was approached by many of the displaced people, and they asked my permission to gather. An armed band of the holy, a force of Fratiris militia who wish to use their faith to throw back the heretics and the unholy. I told them that I could bless them, but that I could not declare a crusade.
Why not? Of course, as long as the Pedrizo does not mind.
Peculiar law states that matters religious are not strictly his preserve. You
are the cardinal. You govern religious matters. A crusade can only be declared by the representative of the ecclesiarchy. It is only with your authority that the Fraterus can be armed. Zerion paused.
So it is in my power to contribute to the defence of the planet.
More than contribute, to multiply its defences many times over.
How many men do you have who are ready to bear arms?
At last count, there are over 100,000 souls, Shalia said.
And do they have weapons?
I have accepted donations from ruling members of the Richstar family. I think we have enough las rifles for each man.
This is good news,
Zerium smiled broadly.
I have prayed to the Emperor for help, and I think this is his gift to us. You fill me with courage. Vettor, come here. Have the papers drawn up for a religious crusade, and I will put my seal to them immediately.
As they waited, Zerium stood and walked to the window. The midday sun lit the long, curving contrails of planetary landers with golden light. The sky was crisscrossed with the dissipating threads of cumulus scattering before the high winds. Zerium sighed.
For months, lighters have been ferrying unfortunates to the planet. Do you know what the locals call these people? Influxes. They are not permitted in the Evercity by order of the Pedrizo. Their number has tested the resources of potents sorely. Vettor tells me that convoys of food go there each day.
Vettor nodded in confirmation. Zerium sighed.
It is a shame that we do not help them here, in the Evercity.
He and Vettor were rehearsing a well-worn conversation.
The Pedrizo did not think it proper. Not with the festival coming,
the Ordinand said.
It seems a shame to banish them from the great feast.
There are many rituals, and you know how many undesirables have landed on the planet.
So I have heard.
The Cardinal pressed his knuckles to the point at the top of his nose, where his brows came together in prayer.
We are all being tested, Vettor. But think of the Emperor, who has endured the torture of the Golden Throne for 10,000 years. What are these trials we are facing now compared to those that he has endured on our behalf?
Vettor made the sign of the Aquila. You are right, Your Holiness.
Should I intervene on their behalf?
The Cardinal asked.
Do you think the Pedrizo would listen?
Yes, I am sure, Shalia said, if the urgency was made clear to him.
I shall come with you, said Vettor.
Shalia nodded and stood, his feet almost silent, on the parquet floor of the library.
Cardinal, your heart is good. I am sure that if you went to see the Pedrizo and spoke to him of what is in your heart, of your concern for the people, then he could not fail to be moved.
Chapter 7 Zerium and his Ordinand made their way down the sweeping ceremonial staircase of the Basilica, the Cardinal's walking stick tap-tapping with each step. There were high ceilings and occasional landings with gilded furniture in opulent style set against the wall. In the 3 years he had been posted to this system, Zerium had been impressed with his Ordinand, but he had not managed to break the air of formality between them. Vettor kept one step behind the Cardinal, hands held before him in a posture of reverence. They passed a pair of choir boys who were running up the stairs. They stopped when they saw the Cardinal and stood to the side with stiff formality. Zerium put his hand on their heads.
Benedictus, go with the faith of the Holy Emperor.
The boys ran off and the two men continued down the long, wide spiral.
I have been here 3 years, and still I am finding much that is strange about the gallows cluster.
How so, Cardinal?
before I was primary Zerium, on the shrine world of Greater Treen. It was within a week's warp jump of Holy Terra, and every building, every field, every four-way junction had a shrine to a saint or the emperor. It was a world of prayer and devotion. And you think that Potence is not?
Not in the same way,
Zerim said, pausing on the third landing down.
I do not understand.
Zerim turned towards him.
The Cathedral Ignatio is the largest cathedral in the Gallows Cluster. A wonder, a supreme monument to the glory of the Emperor, and yet barely a soul comes to it. But the chapels and oratories of the Ever-City are thronged day and night. Is it the climb up to the Acropolis that tests their faith so much? If the Emperor could sacrifice his life and existence to our protection, do you not think the people of the Peculiar could climb up these steps to pay homage?
You do not do them justice, Your Holiness. They hold the Saint's Cathedral in too much awe. They do come.
When?
After the morning mass on the Feast of Ignatio, there is a great procession from the chapel to Saint Ignatio up to the cathedral. They reached the bottom of the stairs and crossed towards the gate of the basilica. The gates were of reinforced steel. They opened silently as the two figures approached. Outside the courtyard it was dark, where the vast cathedral stretched up into the sky. Before them, the cardinal's grave palanquin waited, pennants hanging from its square platform, moving gently in the light air. It tilted slightly as he mounted the steps, lowered his weight upon the ornate seat, and started forward. Before him went clerics and priests bearing torches, and a servitor choir set into a Mikoshi shrine. The procession skirted the buttresses on the east side of the Cathedral Ignatio, and the wind caught the yellow torches and flattened the flames sideways as they processed past the members of the local Calabaneer who raised arms in salute. They fell under the shadow of the gatehouse, with its loopholes, portcullis and armoured gates, which was now home to 30 sisters of the Order of the Ebon Chalice. As they approached, a lone figure strode from the gatehouse doorway. It was Celestian Simona. She wore black power armour, inscribed with the skull-filled cup of her order, the oldest of all the daughters of the Emperor. She carried her helmet in the crook of her power-armoured elbow, and made the sign of the Aquila. Her white cloak, lined with red fur, flapped in the breeze as she addressed them.
It is late to go out, Your Highness.
You are right, he said, but I was moved by the spirit of the Holy Emperor. The plight of the unfortunates weighs on my soul.
You are going to see the Pedrizo?
Yes.
Will he see you?
I do not see why not. He never sees the head of our order.
He is often working, Vettor put in. His devotional work is revered by many for the sublimity of his painting.
Is that so? We are your honorary guard, Cardinal. If you go out, then let us accompany you.
From the arch of the gateway, 10 sisters stepped forward at her command. They clutched their bolters to their chest as they pushed through the choir to stand beneath the grave palanquin, and only then did the gates of the cathedral swing slowly open. Chapter 8
Up, child, the man said.
He put out a hand, and Karkle took it. He did not know who the owner of the hand was. All he knew was that it was a friend. A comrade, a brother.
Sit at the back. There's many more to come.
Karkle sat at the back of the half-track as the carriage quickly filled with others like him, with sheepish attitudes, growing confident with the promise of belonging and purpose. He nodded to each of them as they pressed in about him.
All set,
a brother shouted, and the back flap was hauled up on chains and pinned into place.
My name is Brother Zephan, the man said. Welcome.
He banged the side of the half-track. The engine revved, and they moved forward. They were driven through the tent city. The threat of the place had gone now that he was no longer alone.
"Where are we going?"
one of the others called out.
"To be tested," Brother Zephan said.
"What sort of test?"
Brother Zephan's face was impassive.
"It is one of faith."
The convoy stopped at a checkpoint. Karkel heard the shouts of Gangaglot. Zephan was speaking to one of them. Karkel felt sure that the gangers would be asking for him.
"A murderer!
And a bread thief!" they would be saying.
"Not worth taking. Not worth anyone's trouble. Put a lasbolt through his neck before he betrays your trust."
He kept his head down. But then Zephan waved, and the convoy was moving forward once more. The gangers let them drive straight through the checkpoint, and when they were out onto the plains heading south, the convoy accelerated until the men inside were thrown about. Karkel did not try to speak. He concentrated on his faith, on the confessions he had made. At last, they stopped. He prayed as he had been taught as a child. "Up now," Brother Zephan called. Karkel's legs were stiff from being bent for so long. He pushed himself up and tried to get his bearings. They had driven for what felt like an hour. The tent city was just a thin, white line on the horizon, and behind it, hazy with distance and dust, rose the rock of the Evercity and the golden domes of Cathedral Ignazio. They had stopped at what looked like a disused agricultural warehouse. Weeds grew from the rockcrete foundation slabs. It looked derelict, with cracked glass in the windows and gaping holes in the meshwire fencing. Karkel slid down to the ground. Six trucks had disgorged hundreds of young men out onto the entranceway. The press of bodies had a nervous scent to it. "This way," a loud hailer instructed. Karkel moved with the others, shuffling towards the nearest building. The slide doors were open wide. The loud hailers were stationed at each step of their progress. "Over here," one ordered, and Karkel took a place in one of the many queues. He could smell food. At the front of the line was a man with a cauldron of slop. He handed Karkel a bowl. Karkel looked down in wonder at the generosity. "Move along now," he was ordered, and he did what he was told. They fed him until he could eat no more, and then he was taken to a room and stripped to his bare, shivering flesh. Karkel was one among 50, standing, ashamed by their nakedness. He did not think. He followed, he obeyed, he felt gratitude. They were herded forward into a low chamber with rockcrete walls and bare pipework. "Shower," Zephan ordered, as the water came on with a gurgle spurting out of the pipes. It was pungent with sterilising chems. There was slab soap and brushes. The water was lukewarm. Karkel did not care. He stood and let it wash over.